Welcome back to the Tape Store, everyone. This is Toby.
And this is Brooke.
We were made in the 80s.
And played in the 90s.
And we are back after 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Sorry. So let me explain what happened. We're okay.
We're great.
Yeah. What happened was we were preparing to record last week.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister was coming into town.
And we knew she was coming.
Yeah.
But we didn't know how quickly to our house.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, obviously, me and Brooke, we live in Alabama. My mom lives in Georgia. And when my sister comes and visits, she always goes to my mom first. And we thought she was going to stay a few days with my mom. And then they were going to caravan over, I think, around the weekend or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is last Thursday. And we are currently, because it is... What is today?
It's Thursday. the next Thursday.
Yeah. No, but today's date is April 11th.
Yeah.
So April 4th, we thought she was going to come April 5th or 6th or something like that. Like we, you know, but on Wednesday, April 6th, we get a call and she wanted to come earlier than we thought.
Of course, we were like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, but she wanted to see her niece and nephew. So we were like, okay, look, we're not going to be able to record. My sister's coming. I haven't seen her in 5 years. I was excited to see her. But anyway, so we pushed everything back a week.
Yes,
that's basically
what we're doing. A great, great, great week with family.
Yeah.
So it was definitely, we're sorry for you guys, but it was, you know, it was definitely worth pushing.
Yeah.
Family's always first.
So that's why the sudden Instagram post about being postponed to April 11th, which is today. And we are excited because we are talking about more unsolved mysteries.
Yes.
And there
which is our, it's our new, like, Tape Store 2.0. Favorite
yeah it's a great yeah it's well it's a great thing to fall back on because there's just a litany.
Yeah, there's never not material there.
I mean, that show lasted for years and years, and you had a lot of solved cases. You have still some that are unsolved, and you can find these things on Pluto TV streams it for free.
Yeah,
and you can
free on Amazon Prime. Well, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
A couple other places.
No, we get it on Pluto TV for completely free.
Yeah.
And you can just watch it to your heart's content and find out if there have been updates and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
So it's great. So we decided to go a different direction with Unsolved Mysteries this week and talk about three mysteries. Let's see. We're going to focus on three.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll do some honorable mentions if I can think of some, or if Brooke can think of some, you know, by the end of the episode. But we want to focus on three. And... let's see. Let me look. Two of them. One is solved.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about three on this episode of the Tape Store.
Well, one of them is technically solved.
No, one is for sure. It's been settled.
Okay.
Two, it's still up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So and we're going to go in chronological order.
Okay.
But this week. On our Unsolved Mysteries edition of the Tape Store, we're going to talk about the Mary Celeste,
mm-hmm.
which was in 1872.
Yes, which I love.
We're going to talk about Princess Anastasia / Anna Anderson.
Also amazing.
Yeah, which is a fun story.
Yeah.
Which I would say goes into the late 1800s, 1896, into, well, really... the 1980s.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about the Victoria Peak Treasure,
mm-hmm.
which was in 1937.
Okay.
So
these are all older ones.
They're older.
Well, the stories are older.
The stories are older, but they're not true crime.
No.
We're not getting
into...
Yeah,
I think that's the difference between this one and the last time we talked about Unsolved Mysteries. You know, we had some murder cases
stuff. Oh, yeah,
yeah. But this is all just... unexplained strange things.
Mythology,
mm-hmm.
I would say. So we're going to jump right in. And we just wanted to take a different approach and talk about like some mythology and some just things that have allure, is mysterious.
Yeah, they kind of fall into urban legend categories, if you will.
Yeah, basically. Perfect, yeah. We're going to just jump right in, and we're going to start with the Mary Celeste. Now, let's first talk about what the Mary Celeste is, mm-hmm. and then we're going to talk about the incident, and then we're going to talk about the theories, and then we can talk about our theories. But okay, so here's what the Mary Celeste was. The Mary Celeste, it was a Canadian-built, American-registered merchant brigantine. It was a ship, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes the thing that makes the Mary Celeste so the mystery surrounding it is this ship, again, as I said, Canadian built, American registered. It was a merchant ship. It was discovered adrift and deserted in the Atlantic Ocean off the Azorean Islands on December 4th, 1872.
Now, where's the Azorean Islands?
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up. Okay, the Azores.
I'm just more thinking about people listening.
Yeah, it's 9 volcanic islands near. Let's see. Let me look. They're near Portugal.
Okay.
So like Portugal is actually a small country. Mm-hmm. So guys, if you look at the map of Europe, and you look at Spain, Spain kind of encases Portugal. Portugal is this little strip
right
on the far west part of Spain. Now, if you leave the shores of Portugal and head west,
mm-hmm.
you might run into the Azores. The Azores are kind of they're
out there, yeah.
They're out there, but they're west of they're in the region of Portugal,
okay,
in the Atlantic Ocean. So that's where the Mary Celeste was, found on December 4th, 1872. It was found by another ship, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is the 1870s,
yeah.
So, you know, people are still sailing ships. It was found by a Canadian brigantine ship named the Del Gratia,
mm-hmm.
The De Gratia, yeah. Not the Del. Sorry, I read that wrong. The De Gratia found it in a disheveled but seaworthy condition under partial sail with her lifeboat missing.
Mm.
And I'm reading Wikipedia.
Yeah.
The last entry in her log was dated 10 days earlier. So the captain
mm-hmm.
entered a log 10 days before she was found, the
right.
ship. She had left New York City for Genoa, Italy,
yeah.
on November 7th and was still amply provisioned when found. She had alcohol. She was carrying alcohol.
Yeah, lots in the mm-hmm. hold.
Which was very dangerous to carry during this time.
Yes.
Her cargo of alcohol was intact and the captain's and crew's personal belongings were undisturbed. None of those who had been on board were ever seen or heard from again.
Mm.
Yes. So this is kind of just your run-of-the-mill ghost ship situation.
Yes, which we love.
Which Brooke loves.
I specifically love.
Well, Brooke likes ghost ships because of Dracula.
Yes. Yeah, my immediate thought, because when we were watching the episode, they're like, according to the captain's log. So, and all I can think of is, you know, when Dracula's being transported from Transylvania to England.
Right.
And, you know, all we have to go on of what happened on that voyage was the captain's log.
Right.
So I naturally go straight there. So I love it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've read Dracula, which is the epistolary novel by
yes.
Bram Stoker.
If you don't know what an epistolary novel is, that means it's a novel written and told through stories, diary entries, or like newspaper clippings. So there's no like real time action.
Yeah.
You're relying on like primary sources essentially.
Right. That's
even though it's fiction.
They're a lot of fun to read because
yeah.
it forces you to kind of think and put things together, and
you have to fill in the gaps that aren't filled in by the diary entries.
Right.
Or whatever.
I just recently read an epistolary novel called De-Evolution. By Max Brooks, the guy that wrote World War Z, which is also epistolary.
Mm-hmm.
But De-Evolution is about a Bigfoot massacre.
Oh my gosh.
In the mountains of
Washington. Yeah, I gotta read it next.
Yeah, in the mountains of Washington State. And I just love the epistolary format. It's especially eerie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, again, you have to kind of use your mind. It's not being told in a third-person omniscient or a first-person
right,
omniscient.
Right, you don't have an all-knowing narrator that's
right.
kind of helping you
it's
piece
so
things
great.
Together. Exactly.
So when you read Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is epistolary, it's the same thing. He explains things through journal entries, newspaper clippings, things like that, and there is a particular part of the book where it talks about a ship, an English ship called the Demeter.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a movie, those of you who are, you know, fans of Dracula probably know there's a movie out now called The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is basically a movie
about
what happened on that ship, because
which,
we really we don't fully know.
No, Bram Stoker doesn't.
He leaves all of that to your imagination, which is fabulous. But I loved the movie because it kind of gave me an idea of what might have happened.
Right. Cool. He doesn't give you a narrative of what happened on the ship. You just get the captain's log, and the ship shows up, and it's completely deserted except for
the captain thrashed to the
captain
the
is tied to the wheel and he's dead. And yeah, just read Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's so good.
You gotta
read it. But this echoes this idea of there is a ship. It's the Mary Celeste. At some point, for up to 10 days, we don't know. It was sailing by itself, still seemingly on course, and it was completely empty.
Yeah.
And that's just
with everyone's stuff still there.
Yeah, with everyone's it's like everybody just
like there was disappears. like when we watch it, there's no evidence of packing or
no evidence of foul play
anything
either.
Anything like that? Yeah, it was wild.
The story is really really it's really drawn out. Like these there's a lot of theories and from supernatural to natural.
Yeah.
But. Even though the captain's sword was sheathed under the bed, and they thought that maybe there was blood on the sword, but the blood turned out it turned out not to be blood. Right. I think it was rust.
Yeah.
So no evidence of violence on this ship, and it's just really, we don't really deal with this stuff as much nowadays because of the internet and technology.
Well, in the strides that even just, police and things like that have made, like, there's so much we can find out.
Yeah, there's so much we can find out, and people do still fall off the face of the earth. I mean, it still does happen, which is why I think it's even more interesting nowadays how people are able to do it.
Yeah.
But back in the late 1800s, people could disappear, and there was no way of knowing how this could have happened or what could have happened. And, it just is really creepy. So the fact that the late 19th century was a time when technology, ships were still used largely for international transportation. Actually, it was the only.
Yeah, yeah. If you were leaving, anywhere further than your homeland, then yeah, you were going by ship.
So because of that, it allowed people because of the technology was where it was at, which is definitely not where it is today. Because of all that, it allowed people to create legend around the story of this ship. And, the idea of the ghost ship is nothing new.
No. But because of the time period and what was available to them, who's to say they were wrong? There was no real way to debunk it.
No, there wasn't. So we can look at some theories. You can look up. The ship was not far from. She had made it most of her voyage.
Yeah, I find it interesting that the ship set sail on November 5th, 1872. Because if you guys are fans of V for Vendetta, you think of remember the 5th of November,
right?
So I don't know. For me, that was kind of neat. I was like, ooh, okay.
Interesting. The last log was 20 days into its voyage. Yeah. And the thing is, its discovery on December 4th, it was still on course. If you look at the map and you look at the dots, like where it started and then where they were for the last log and their discovery position, they were still headed right through the Strait of Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Which is that little area between Africa and Europe where you can get into the Mediterranean and stuff. It's really interesting. They found the ship's daily log in the mate's cabin. Its final entry was dated at 8 a.m. on November 25th, 9 days earlier. Again, it was discovered on December 4th, 1872. It recorded Mary Celeste's position as 37 degrees north, 25 degrees west, or whatever. I can't really read this location, but it gave their, in the Azores, nearly 400 miles from the point where De Gratia encountered her. The cabin interiors were wet and untidy from water that had entered through the doorways and skylights, but were otherwise in reasonable order. He found personal items scattered about the captain's cabin. What was the captain's name? Let me look up the captain. What was the captain's name? Oh, I hate when I don't have all this information. Captain Briggs. His name was Captain Benjamin Briggs was his name. Benjamin Briggs. So,
that sounds like a captain's name. It really does.
Most of the ship's papers were missing along with the captain's navigational instruments.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. Galley equipment was neatly stowed away. There was no food prepared or under preparation, and there were ample provisions. Still had a lot of food there. Mm. There were no obvious signs of fire or violence. The evidence indicated an orderly departure of the ship by means of the missing lifeboat.
Right.
So that's the thing.
That's the thing. The lifeboat is missing. So for sure, well, at least to me, for sure,
they got on it.
They at least got on it.
They got on
it. We don't know what happened after that. But
we don't know for sure. I have my theory. I think it's a pretty boring theory, but it's like Occam's razor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The most logical explanation is more than likely the most probable one, right? Mm-hmm. So they have hearings and stuff, and I'm not going into all that, but let's look at the proposed explanations of what happened to this crew. Again, they're taking alcohol to Genoa, Italy. They don't make it, this crew. Let's look at the crew. Who's on the crew? How many people are on this ship? It was the captain, Captain Briggs. Mm-hmm. His wife was on it as well. They had a baby child.
Wow.
Yeah. Was on the ship as well. Let's see. His first mate, Albert G. Richardson, was there. How many is that? That's
five, four.
Second
four.
Mate, Andrew Gilling.
Five.
The steward, newly married Edward William Head. Four general seamen were Germans from the Frisian Islands.
Mm-hmm.
So
10.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Pretty big lifeboat.
Yeah. So let's look at some theories here. What happened? I'm just imagining being the captain of this De Gratia.
Yeah, finding this.
Finding this, like, you know, you're rowing up and they're yelling.
Yeah.
They're rowing up to the boat and they're yelling, "Hello, hello, hello," and they're getting nothing.
Yeah.
And they know something's wrong because they're not getting any sounds from the ship and it's half sail.
Mm.
She's still seaworthy, which means she can sail, but she's half sail, which means something's not right.
Yeah.
Right. And to get on that ship and nobody's there, that's just
weird. That'd be so creepy.
And the chances that they would find it.
Yeah.
The chances that you would, let me tell you something. There's stuff there's ships that have been lost, never been found.
Yeah.
Planes that have crashed in the ocean, never been found. Ocean's a big place.
Yeah, so the fact that they ran up on
is the ship. Wild mm-hmm. to me. Just wild.
Yeah.
So here's the proposed explanations. Foul play is the first one.
Mm.
That's the one we like to go to.
Yeah, because it's more exciting.
It's more exciting and more, yeah.
Like, ooh, a scandal.
The theories of murder and conspiracy, like a mutiny. And if you don't know what a mutiny is, it's when the crew members take over the ship, they overthrow the captain or whatever. It's mm-hmm. just it becomes chaos. Like the order, which is the captain, the first mate, second mate, on down to the crew, the crewmates, the crew members.
Mm-hmm.
It's when that breaks down.
Yeah.
There's a mutiny. Every man for himself or whatever, whatever. You know, a rebellion on the ship.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's no evidence that there was any disarray.
Yeah.
On board. It's kind of wild. Natural phenomenon has been blamed on this. They believe that a water spout.
Okay.
There's some people that believe that.
That's, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
A severe waterspout strike, which that, is a tornado on the ocean.
Yeah, that cleared everyone off the ship.
A severe waterspout strike before the abandonment could explain the amount of water in the ship and the ragged state of her rigging and sails.
Okay.
The low barometric pressure generated by the spout could have driven water from the bilges into the pumps, leading the crew to overestimate the amount of water on Mary Celeste and believe that she was in danger of sinking.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay.
But then it still doesn't explain where they went. It just explains what might have happened to the inside of the ship.
Well, that leads to the most viable explanation, which is this one. They got on the lifeboat. I think that's probably something we can all agree.
Yeah.
That they got on the lifeboat.
Well, and when we were watching the episode, one of the theories too was that the alcohol on board
yes.
became like almost like toxic as far as the scent. And like when they opened up the brig, they're like, oh my God, we got to get out of here. And that was a theory that they posed of why they might have boarded the lifeboat, because it was a toxic environment from here on out.
That is what I believe happened.
Yeah. And I think that's highly plausible.
Something
I think intercepted them once they got on the lifeboat.
Okay. Yeah. What I think happened was something happened with the cargo, mm-hmm. likely the alcohol, mm-hmm. somehow became a danger or whatever. They got on the lifeboat.
Yeah.
And likely and you're coming from a position of, if you were the captain, what would you do?
Yeah, yeah.
If you had to get off the ship, if the ship became unsafe, what would you do?
Yeah, you save the people.
You would get on the lifeboat and you would attach a rope from the lifeboat to the ship and you would follow behind the ship. You would put the ship on course.
Yeah. Which and, it was on course, so that's plausible. Right.
And then you would
be, kind of follow the ship.
You would be drugged by the ship.
Yeah.
And they believe,
which would explain why his navigational tools were gone.
Right. And it's possible. So, yeah. So you got to think that all the navigational tools, they're on the lifeboat.
He's got them. Yeah.
The crew's in the lifeboat. He's got everything, yeah. like all the essentials yes. to navigate.
Yes.
And then either a storm or a rogue wave, which these things do happen.
They do happen. Or, I know they did pose that, like, pirates or, like, you know, another ship that maybe had ill intent, you know, took them aboard. I mean, it could be any one of those things.
Or the rope could have just come undone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, maybe at night when they're not seeing, they lose the... And the thing is that if that happens, if you're on a lifeboat, you're in their position, and if this is what happened, if you're on a big ship...
I mean, shoot, it could have leaked. They could have... I mean, what, the lifeboat could have been faulty. I don't know.
So if you're on a big ship with sails,
yeah.
the wind is pushing the ship. The lifeboat is simply at the mercy of the ship.
Yes.
If your line snaps, well, that ship now, it seems like everything, to a degree, no, it's not like driving a car or flying an airplane. Like, right. yes, it does generally move slower.
Yes.
But when you're in a little lifeboat and that big ship's being carried by the wind mm-hmm. and you lose your line, that's it. You're not catching up. You're not catching up. You're done.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure it out.
You're done.
Yeah.
The ship's gone. There is no catching up with it. You're not going to be able to swim after the ship.
No.
You're not going to be able to. Like, there's no way a person could swim after the ship when it's being carried by the wind, it's being carried by the waves and the currents or whatever. So I think that's what happened. They got separated from the ship because the lifeboat was never found. They got separated from the ship and they perished.
Yeah.
I don't think
whether it was natural, like, you know, like the wind and waves or something.
I think it was just natural. I don't think as much as it's exciting to think that something could have been perpetrated, mm-hmm. It's actually the least likely thing that happens.
Yeah.
It's usually the least likely thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and especially, I mean, if they weren't prepared, yeah. I mean, it said, like, you know, there wasn't like significant food missing, you know what I mean? Like all these things, like they likely boarded in a panic.
Something separated them from the ship,
yeah.
and I think that they perished at sea in the lifeboat.
Which is very sad, yeah.
And, of course, it's a big sea, 75%. People don't realize how big our planet is.
Yeah.
It's a big planet.
And there's a lot of ocean.
We're very tiny. And there's a lot of ocean, 75%. And, yes, stuff gets lost in the ocean all the time. We've not found Amelia Earhart.
Right.
I mean,
which there's a really good Unsolved Mysteries episode about that.
Yeah, we have a general area of where she went down.
Yes, but because still of fuel. Have not located.
Never located her.
Yeah.
No, you can just miss it.
The Earth has her secrets.
Right. That's basically it, you know. So that's the Mary Celeste.
That's the quote of the episode.
Yeah. It's true. The Earth has their secrets. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this other Unsolved Mystery I think they dedicated an entire episode to this.
You mean like they didn't do the three-part?
No. I think that they dedicated either half an episode or most of an episode, pretty much an entire episode, on the legend of Princess
Anastasia.
Or Duchess Anastasia, Grand Duchess Anastasia of Russia. And this person, Anna Anderson, mm-hmm. who claimed to be
The lost Princess Duchess
Anastasia. Okay, so let's just give a very, very brief, situation of what was going on. Duchess Anastasia was one of the daughters of Tsar Nicholas. Tsar Nicholas II.
If you've seen Anastasia from the 90s, then you were at least partially well-versed in the story.
Yeah. I mean...
with a biased perspective.
We were going to talk about that because that just goes to show you how big of a legend Anastasia mm-hmm. was, that they made an animated movie out
yes,
of it.
Yes, it wasn't Disney, but it was Disney quality.
That overlooked... Oh God, they made it seem like she came from this fairy tale.
This amazing, wonderful, warm...
Warm family fairy tale castle.
And that's why I say you get a partial amount of the story, meaning you get to see what happened to the palace, but there's a reason.
No, Tsar Nicholas II was...
He was not great.
Not a good guy.
No.
At all. No. And I'm not saying that the revolutionaries that overthrew him were good guys. But,
no, but I mean, it's not like Tsar Nicholas was innocent and like, how could they do this?
No.
The outrage was understandable.
No, Tsar Nicholas was... I mean, considered historically a poor ruler.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that he pogroms, anti-Jewish sentiment, violence was perpetrated under his reign, and he did nothing to stop it.
Yeah,
so,
not a good guy.
But they look that over in this wonderful Anastasia cartoon.
Look, the music's fantastic. Okay, I have no argument with the cartoon, just the history.
So. That's just what they do. Anyway, so here's what happens. Revolutionaries overthrow. What is the Russian Tsar? The Russian Tsar is essentially the Russian king.
Yeah.
So revolutionaries overthrow.
Because like in the episode they highlighted, you know, like there was, as this family, you know, the Romanov family was growing in opulence and in wealth, the people were starving.
Very much like the French Revolution, right?
Yeah, it's you know, history repeats itself. It's the same story told over and over in different places. And, you know, as they got richer, the people got poorer. And the people had enough at some point. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, it always ends in flames, but
right.
And no one likes that, but you know, it is what it is. It happened.
So the revolutionaries overthrow the Tsar.
Right.
And they murder him. And his wife, and all of their children,
you know,
the Bolsheviks do this on 17 July 1918. That's when we know Nicholas II and his wife and the kids died.
Yes, yeah.
The Bolsheviks, and this is the Bolsheviks when they did this in 1918. This is the Bolshevik Revolution. This is when Russia became the Soviet Union mm-hmm. and all this.
Yeah,
I remember studying that in college and all that, whatever, and in high school. I'm sure you talked about it for a minute.
Yeah.
But this person, Anna Anderson, claimed to be the Grand Duchess Anastasia who survived the massacre.
But yeah, and that's where the legend of, like, you know, everyone was killed but one that made it out.
She somehow made it.
And was never found.
Right.
So.
But here's the thing. Here's what we have to, we have to look at.
And even American Horror Story has done the same thing. American Horror Story, if you guys watch that, it's not 90s, but they do a take on the Anastasia story as well. You know, a why she disappeared. So this is definitely, you know, well ingrained in urban legend. So it's easy to fall for.
Right. So. You're talking to a guy who believes that Jesus lived and died, which, okay, first off, Jesus living is totally a historical fact. Whether you believe that he was God in the flesh or that he was the Messiah, Jesus lived. Other historians that are accepted talk about Jesus.
Yeah, that aren't necessarily Christians.
But I also believe he died, and I believe he rose from the dead. I do believe that. I am religious. Brooke's religious. I do believe that. Somebody might look at that, look at me and say, well, you were probably raised in a church. I was. But I also, into my adult life, stepped back from the emotional experiences I had in church, and I started to study the Bible as a historical document, not just a religious document.
Yeah.
So I believe, so what I'm saying is you're talking to a guy that does believe in the supernatural and in extraordinary things happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the fact that a person could survive something like this.
That's not necessarily impossible.
No. So it has to be proven, because here's the thing, what's interesting about Anastasia. So here is what history says. History says that Anastasia died with her family, killed by the Bolsheviks in Russia, who were ending the Tsardom and starting a new government in July of 1918.
Right.
However, here's what I want you to understand, though. here's what I want people to understand. I'm not making this whole thing about Jesus and Christianity and stuff like that, but here's the thing. When I look at claims that people make historically, you should always look at the context from which they're being claimed.
Yes.
Right? When I'm looking at Anastasia, Anna Anderson, this woman comes out of nowhere and claims that she was actually the long-lost duchess who miraculously survived. And by the way, they were killed by a firing line. They just shot them all. They brought them into, they woke them up in the middle of the night, took them in a room, and they just shot them
all. There was no escaping that.
No. But she claims that she survived it. But here's the thing. On February, here is when she came on the scene. Here's when the claim first came. Now, I remember July 1918, they were supposedly killed. On 27th of February 1920, a young woman attempted to commit suicide in Berlin by jumping off a bridge. She was rescued by a police sergeant and was admitted to a asylum.
Okay.
She spoke German with an accent described as Russian by medical staff. In early 1922, a fellow psychiatric patient claimed that the unknown woman was the Grand Duchess Tatiana of Russia, one of the four daughters of Tsar Nicholas II. On her release, this lady said that she had seen her. So it was a woman, her name Clara Puthert. Mm-hmm. She claimed that this woman that is in the psychiatric place is one of the daughters of Tsar Nicholas.
Right.
Eventually, Baroness Sophie Buxhoveden, a former lady-in-waiting to the Tsarina, visited the asylum. On seeing the woman, she declared, "She's too short for Tatiana." Left convinced that the woman was not a Russian Grand Duchess, a few days later, the unknown woman said, "I did not say I was Tatiana." So, this woman's in a psychiatric ward.
Number one.
Another person in the psychiatric ward says, "She's a duchess. She's Tatiana." A person that knew the royal family in Russia came to see her and said, "Nope, it's not Tatiana." And she said, "Well, I didn't say I was Tatiana."
Right. See, but notice that she didn't say who she was.
A nurse claimed years later, after the patient's release from the asylum, that the woman told her she was Anastasia.
Okay.
Okay. So what's the context we have to look at? A woman claiming to be Anastasia in an insane asylum.
Right. We all would claim a lot of things, I venture to guess, in an insane asylum.
You probably hear a lot of crazy things.
Yeah, I'm the Queen of England.
You probably also hear that, or guys, probably hear that. You know? Yeah, right.
Also, sidebar, Sophie is definitely a character in the cartoon Anastasia, and she has one of the best songs. Paris holds a key to your heart. Just a sidebar.
So, here's the thing. The first, I think, red flag is that the woman who's claiming to be Anastasia is doing so from a
psychiatric ward.
A psychiatric ward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big red flag.
But here's the thing. This story starts to pick up.
Of course it does. People love sensational news.
Right. So the woman's released, and she continues to claim this, and she starts to get believers.
Right. Well, listen. First of all, if you have mental illness is no joke. Mental illness is nothing to play around about. Just for everyone listening. However, if you have a psychosis of some sort and you get attention, come on.
So
it's going to keep on, you know?
She leaves the insane asylum that she was there for a couple years. 1920. And then to 1922. So she was at an insane asylum for 2 years.
Wow. It's rough.
In 1922, from 1922 to 1927, she lives in Germany and Switzerland.
Okay.
Continuing to tell people that she, and her name's Anna Anderson, but she says she's Anastasia, and people,
it helps that her name's Anna.
She has people telling her, that they don't believe her.
Right.
But she has people telling her that they do.
You're going to listen to what appeals to you.
And she is getting sponsorship. And what I mean by sponsorship is, I mean, people are taking care of her.
Why would you stop lying if you're getting that?
She's living off of this.
Yeah.
She's living off of this. And here's the thing. Is she Anastasia? Well, we don't know at this point.
Yeah.
We don't know. Maybe she is. If she is, okay.
Then great. Good for you.
She goes to the United States in 1928. She's there for a few years, and it just continues to build, continues to build. And there is, if you watch the episode of Unsolved Mysteries, there is a historian that they interview. His name is James Blair Lovell. He was a young guy. This is in 1991 when this episode aired.
Yeah.
James Blair Lovell is a historian who wrote a book, and he is convinced, and he says it in the episode. He goes, I'm convinced without a shadow of a doubt, with 100% of my being, she survived, she moved to America, and she died Anna Anderson.
Wow.
And I'm like, whoa, dude. 'Cause she died in 1984.
Yeah.
Still claiming that she was Anastasia. Wow. This is a historian, but all right, seems to be a smart guy, you know?
Yeah.
He is convinced. Mm-hmm. And not only is this historian convinced, there's other historians that were convinced. There were other socialites and royal family
like friends types, or whatever,
friends
yeah.
and family who believed her, but some didn't, you know?
Yeah.
Then she goes to Germany from 1931 to 1968, and she literally, listen to this. Anderson's return to Germany generated press interest and drew more members of the German aristocracy to her cause.
Aristocracy,
believed her. She's in Germany for over 30 years, and then she goes back to the United States in 1968. She's supported by her longtime supporter, a guy named Gleb Botkin. And she marries a guy younger than her.
Good for her.
Yeah, she married a man named John Ecott Jack Manahan.
That's a lot.
Yeah, he was a younger guy. He was considered an eccentric.
Okay. That makes sense.
He was 20 years her junior.
Oh, okay.
Botkin was the best man, her big supporter.
Botkin.
Jack Manahan enjoyed his marriage of convenience, according to Wikipedia, described himself as the Grand Duke in waiting or son-in-law to the Tsar. You see what this is all about?
Oh, man.
I think a lot of this is just about sensationalism.
Yeah.
And about attention.
Yikes.
You know, and somebody might be listening and think, well, you don't really know. Actually, we do know. There's this little thing that came along when we got into the 90s and 2000s, and now we're in the 2010s and the 2020s. There's this little thing that God made when he created us. DNA.
Yep.
Right? You see, and that is what I was commenting to what Brooke said, because Brooke talked about, man, you know, these people believe in her. And I'm like, in the 1920s, there was nothing to dispute.
Well, yeah. Well, and even go back to Mary Celeste. Like, you know, like, there, what can we do to disprove an urban legend?
Right.
Before things like being able to look at DNA or evidence, you know, things like that. Right. But you, as time progresses, you start to run out of those excuses.
Right. And that's, you know, which, by the way, sidebar, again, I'm not making this an apologist thing for religion. It's just when people ask me, like, you know, how do you know God exists? How do you know this, that, and the other? I'm like, if you look at DNA, which is coded and organized and complex, that's not an accident.
Right.
DNA points to an intelligent mind. DNA points to an intelligent designer. So that's why I believe.
And look, you guys, most of you who are listening, who have been listening to us for a hot little minute, you know what we believe. So this isn't a shock to you. If you're new, hello, welcome. And yeah, we're not shy about what we believe,
no,
and
I'm
that's
not.
Fine. If it's upsetting to you, you are free to listen elsewhere.
All right,
but no, we would love for you to stay.
I don't condemn anyone who doesn't believe.
No,
in God. Everybody has a right.
This is
to
what be. We believe. We're
I'm just
okay
telling
with that.
You. If somebody asks, I'm not saying that. Because you don't believe in God, that you're an idiot or something. Mm-mm. I don't believe that. No, I'm not
Never,
saying that. I'm
no.
saying, look, you have a right to feel that way. But if you ask me, somebody says, well, how do you know? The first thing I always say when they say, well, why do you believe in God? The first thing I point to is the design of your body, DNA, and the design of the cosmos points to a designer. So getting back to DNA, though, it's DNA evidence. It's DNA evidence that blows this thing wide open and gives us the truth.
Oh, I'd love to see the historians when it all blows up.
Well, and because by this point, my goodness, by this point, you know, this thing has been going on for
a hot little minute. Decades.
Like 80 years.
Yeah. It's
and
not 19, good.
And this woman is claiming to be a member of the Russian royal family.
And she passes holding to that. And I do think, well, I mean, obviously you're going to get into it, but I mean, her whatever she was diagnosed with, you know, at that time, like I just think it helped her feed into that story.
Listen, when you're claiming something and there is nothing to refute it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're getting people.
You get drunk on the power.
When your people, when people who believe you, your supporters are like, hey, come live in Germany. We'll pay for everything.
Yeah.
You
can be get it.
You'll be a kept woman for decades and you won't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And,
get the allure. Shoot.
So here's what happened, guys. So in 1991, the bodies of Tsar Nicholas II, Tsarina Alexandra, and three of their daughters were exhumed from a mass grave. They were identified on skeletal analysis and DNA testing. Thank you, science.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just because we believe in God, science is wonderful and beautiful and useful. And science, I think, supports I think science supports God more than detracts from him.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's my belief and my opinion through what I've studied and through my own personal experience. But here's the thing, guys, DNA testing is what blows this thing wide open. Mitochondrial DNA was used to match maternal relations, and mitochondrial DNA from the female bones matched that of Prince Philip, Princess Victoria, the bodies of Alexei, royal family, Romanov family, and proved that none of the daughters survived the shooting of the Romanov family. So that is that level of discovery. But wait a minute. In 2007, 2007 was the nail in the coffin for Anna Anderson's argument that she was Anastasia. Let me just go here. Unsolved Mysteries, Anna Anderson. Let me pull up the big one, because in 91 they exhumed the bodies of the royal family and they said nope, she's not her. But now it's for real. In July 2007, a group of amateur archaeologists went out to search, because here's the thing, did you know this? When they found the mass grave site of the Romanovs, two were missing and one of them actually was Anastasia.
Oh wow,
that was kind of crazy, right?
Like, oh crap, maybe it is her.
Maybe Anna Anderson is
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
In July 2007, a group of archaeologists went out to search for the two missing Romanovs. On their third search, they discovered a second grave site, and this is in Russia,
mm-hmm.
approximately 230 feet from the first one. It's not even that far.
Yeah.
It matched the description given in, according to some historical memoirs. They found two partial skeletons, and in April of 2008, they were identified through DNA testing as Alexei and Maria. And Anastasia's remains were among those unearthed in 91.
So, oh, wow.
So they found
Anastasia.
They found Anastasia the first time in 91.
Yeah.
They just didn't know.
Right.
And then 2007, they found the final two. So they added up
everybody
the number.
Everybody
was accounted for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sorry, Anna.
The only thing they can't explain is how Anna Anderson seemed to know a lot of intimate parts of Anastasia's life.
Okay.
That's interesting. I mean, sure. But the science doesn't lie.
No, it doesn't. Especially because the science is dating back to 1918.
Mm-hmm.
There was not an ability to fake DNA at that point. You know what I'm saying?
But we're not done.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
In 2018... the Russian Orthodox Church ordered new DNA testing be done on the remains, and that DNA, along with the DNA from the living relatives, was compared to DNA from the bodies found in the two grave sites. They matched. But here's the big thing. Here's the big thing. They also compared that DNA to Anna Anderson's DNA.
Oh, here we go.
Not a match.
There we go.
Not a match. And people are saying, the DNA results were doctored. Listen, listen, guys. Come on. Okay, not everything's a conspiracy. It just simply
not
isn't.
Everything, though.
So what about James Blair Lovell, who is this really sincere historian who believed everything?
I was going to say, yeah. Do we get anything on him?
He's on the Unsolved Mysteries episode.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, in 91. This guy passed away in 93.
Oh, that's sad.
At the age of 42, so he was.
Oh
young.
Goodness! Yeah, he was young. Oh gracious, he was young.
So he never got those DNA results. He was never informed. So he was never able to kind of.
Well, I guess that's kind of good, because like that would be a pretty big blow.
Yeah,
someone who was such a staunch believer in her validity.
Yeah, he was never able to formulate his own argument against that. And
and
there are still people that are like, no, she's Anastasia. The government's done this. The government's done that. And I'm like, I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. You know, I don't think so.
No.
I think that
it made
for
a great animated movie.
I think
she
was a troubled lady who made a claim and she hit pay dirt
yeah.
making that claim. And science.
And she wrote it the rest of her life.
And science got the last word and said, no, 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 they died. Now listen to me. Listen. These revolutionaries were like, they were going to make sure.
Yeah.
I think they got the job done with whatever they were doing.
Sadly, yeah.
I mean, sadly,
whatever. You know, like tragedies.
I'm not getting
awful.
Into how I feel about the politics of it all. I don't know that much about it. My former professor, Dr. Ward, who who loves Russian history, would know much about it. I would love to call him up. I know. He's a great guy, Dr. Ward. He was one of my professors and great guy. And he specialized in Russian history. I would love to probably hear. I was like, what do you think of all that? You know. Anyway, so that's a plug for Dr. Ward. Anyway, okay. So the last thing we're going to talk about tonight is the Victoria Peak Treasure.
Okay.
And that's a fun one. This is a fun one. This one comes on a lot when we run.
A lot.
Yeah, because we will run Unsolved Mysteries.
Because I think I've seen this episode like a million times, but like in different pieces.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just on in the background.
We will run Unsolved Mysteries like through like all day.
Yeah, yeah. It'll just be on.
It'll be on. My kids know what it's about. It doesn't freak them out. We've talked about this. It does not. They're not afraid of it.
No, they ask for it. They're like.
They're not afraid of the sketches, which I'm terrified of. To this day,
that's
I don't
because
like
they're kids of nowadays. They have much scarier stuff than sketches.
And
they'll be in bed and they're like, and like my son, like I'll be in there like talking to him and he'll hear din 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 and he'll be like, oh yeah, dad's watching Unsolved Mysteries.
It's become a comfort thing.
It's a comfort show.
And our friends Jason and Amber who are
amazing.
We love them. Jason's like a brother from another mother to me, and they are very diehard listeners of the show. We love you guys.
And hi, Katie and Josh.
But they love our they love to hear me talk about the sketches that I was terrified of
and it definitely still very much triggers Amber. Sorry, Amber.
So was she afraid of them?
Not the sketches. The show in general. The show in general. She's like, oh my god, nightmares.
Yeah.
We all had nightmares. That's how it is.
It was scary. It's a scary show.
But now we like to punish ourselves.
Now it's like something that makes me think of being a kid. So
this
Victoria Peak Treasure. Okay, so what is the Victoria Peak Treasure, you ask? And then when I say Victoria Peak, I mean V-I-C-T-O-R-I-O, Victoria Peak Treasure, also known as the Treasure of Victoria Peak or the Treasure of San Andres.
Oh, right. Or
San Andres, is a alleged cache of gold reportedly found inside a place called Victoria Peak in 1937 in southern New Mexico.
Yeah.
Real American mythology here.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're a young country, you know, and so a lot of our mythology is not that long ago. So when you really take the span of history, 1937 is not that far. It's not even 100 years. This treasure was allegedly found in 1937 by an American businessman and gold prospector by the name of Milton Ernest Doc Noss. So we're going to call him Doc Noss, you know.
Okay.
And his wife's name is Babe Noss. So this is what supposedly happened. He supposedly found this. According to... Now, here's the thing. I believe this.
Okay.
According to Doc Noss, this is what happened. He was hanging out in this plot of land in New Mexico. He's a prospector or whatever. He finds a cave.
Okay.
And he goes in to, this is 1937, okay?
Yeah, we don't have the kind of like bars on, like
regulations.
Yeah.
Right?
Land was just land. You could just go there.
Once again, it's like in 1937, yeah, the American frontier was pretty much over, but it was still
wild and untamed.
The regulation of, listen, guys, look at a satellite image of America. Look at a satellite image of America where you can see where the lights are. And obviously, you know, like the East Coast is lit up.
Yeah.
The West Coast is lit up and there's lights here, there. But you will see vast swaths of our country where there's nothing.
Dark. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there's still places that are really remote in our country.
Yeah. That are just wild, which is good.
Which lends to, I think, the argument about the existence of something like Bigfoot, you know, cryptids and things like that, which, you know, me and Jason are suckers for. We love that.
Exactly. Big plug for the Blurred Creatures podcast, who covers that brilliantly. Yeah.
So there's a lot out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot out there. And here's the thing. So 1937, he finds this. It's not very regulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's just out here on this land. And he finds on this mountain called Victoria Peak, excuse me, he finds a cave and he goes in,
yeah,
and a cavern, and he starts to kind of explore it, which I think is really freaking scary.
Oh no, it couldn't be me.
But anyway, according to Doc Noss, he explored this cavern and found hundreds and hundreds of gold bars.
Yep.
And treasure chests with gold coins. Just, I think they said that in nowadays terms, like or in today's value,
yeah,
of gold, it would be in the billions.
Golly, like think the mummy, like when they you know are in the depths of the, yeah, you know, Hymenoptera.
No,
just gold everywhere.
Do I believe these things existed? Yeah,
yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
I think that. Listen, guys, it was a few years ago that some guys in England found a Viking horde.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got arrested and got years in prison.
Because they didn't report it.
Because they did not report
it. And see,
it.
And again, that's another point, is that nowadays, you find something like that old, it's national treasure,
yeah,
right?
Because
but
it's...
But back
it's,
then, yeah, what the heck? Who cares? Like, who cares? Like, it's...
Well...
Not who cares. But, you know. It's, if you find it, it's yours. No big deal.
Well, yeah.
If you don't tell people.
We'll get into that.
I know.
But the thing is that these guys a few years ago in England... They found a Viking horde.
Yeah, like legit.
And instead of telling the country or the authorities.
The authorities. Yeah.
Why is that important? Somebody might go, well, no, finders keepers. Listen to me.
It's history at this point. It's not about riches.
It's not about that. It's about understanding civilizations and, yeah, all, and how we developed.
It could be missing pieces to a puzzle that we're... Right. Forever trying to figure out.
It's important.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Like if you found a Civil War treasure cache and you tried to keep it, good luck.
No,
that's
you're
not going to work for you.
I'm
just saying Civil War, things like that. These are things that are very important for us to understand as a nation.
What went down and stuff like that.
Because
yeah,
when I look at history, it's mm-hmm, like a puzzle that I think that we generally have all the pieces to, but there's pieces missing. So you find a piece to the puzzle, you put it in the puzzle piece, you don't try to keep it for yourself, right? And I understand that that's hard if you ran up on a treasure chest full of gold. I'm not
right. I mean, there'd be an urge to, you know, right, well, who's gonna know?
It tells us so much, right?
Yeah.
Serious thing.
And we're a big historian family, so like we would, you know, the need for the knowledge would be greater than the need for the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But some people are not like that.
Our next door neighbors, when I was a kid, found pieces of pottery when they were, I think they were, I don't know how they found it. It was in the ground, but they found a piece of pottery. They turned it in, and it come to find out it was Native American pottery, and that was important.
Oh, my word.
It was important.
That's beautiful and sad.
It was, I'm just saying it was important.
Yeah.
For, it was like, hey, they were here too. They were in this area, and that, what else is there, right? So,
mm-hmm,
okay, so so he finds all these gold bars, this bullion, pure gold bars.
And they didn't. I'm asking it because I don't remember. Did they say in the episode like where it originated from, or did they not know?
No, he just said that. Okay, so he found all the bars. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's get back to Doc Noss, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're just talking about treasure hunting and stuff. But so it's, Doc Noss finds all this. Okay. And the first thing he does is he goes back and tells his wife.
Babe
Noss. According to Babe, there was a crown. There is a picture of this crown. You can find it online.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That supposedly had like all these jewels, mm-hmm, and all these diamonds in it. And all these gold bars that were so heavy, he couldn't lift them out. Now, he did take some out, allegedly. But there were hundreds. So the first thing that Doc and Babe did was they went to get a claim, to file a claim so they could say, this is our land. We're gonna mine it. Right. So they apply to get a claim or whatever, and then Doc Noss decides.
To open his mouth.
No, he decides that he's going to...
Oh, not yet. Okay.
No, he wants to open the cave up more because it was difficult to get in.
Yeah.
It was really difficult for him to get in. So what he said is, so he hires a guy, low-key. Actually, according to Babe Noss, he paid him in bars.
Oh, gosh.
And paid the guy in gold bars to dynamite a bigger entrance into the cave. Well, he dynamites it and actually closes himself out of the cave. Instead of opening a bigger hole into the cave,
it shut it.
It collapses.
Ay, ay, ay.
So he shuts himself out. So it went from hundreds and hundreds of gold bars to like a few dozen, according to the show,
according to
the sources, a few dozen that he had taken out, and he buried them in different locations, apparently.
Like Horcruxes.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is 1930.
Yeah.
Sorry. And yes, at this time, and I don't understand the laws and the history. I mean, I taught U.S. history, but I don't know everything. So apparently it was illegal to sell gold on the black. It was illegal to sell gold.
Okay.
In bullion form like that. And he had found it. So he decided that he was going to try to sell it on the black market, kind of like, you know, off the books. And he tries to sell it to this guy. They end up having a dispute, and this guy actually shoots Doc Noss, kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever secrets about Victoria Peak died with Doc Noss. Now, so who takes over?
Babe.
Babe Noss takes over. The
his lady love.
Yeah, the mission. And but then something real. Now, okay, listen. I'm not a government conspiracy guy, but something really weird happens.
Okay.
After Babe and, you know, and the rest of the family decide to continue on to try to get into this mountain,
right,
to get this gold. The United States military takes over the land surrounding and comprising
of the land that they bought.
That they bought for missile testing.
In what year is this?
Oh, let's see.
Because that's quite a time jump.
Let's see here. This is,
So the events of this happened in 1937.
Okay. Well, 1937 is when Doc Noss finds the gold.
Yes.
He's killed in 1949.
Okay.
Doc Noss is. Let me look up.
So all this time, he's had possession of at least some of the gold. He's doing the black market thing. The deal goes bad, and he gets killed.
Yes,
but he's killed by 1949. But the missile testing.
Yes. Okay. Hold on.
It's the 50s, I believe.
Yeah, it would have been after World War II, which is when we really kind of
took off.
It's
like the Oppenheimer, like, you know, kind of era.
Was we took off after. No, we really took off. I thought Oppenheimer was pre-World War II.
Is it pre? I don't know. I didn't see the movie.
Oppenheimer was, I think, key in getting everything for World War II. Okay. In 1952, as they were getting close, Babe Noss, this is after Doc dies. Okay. Three years after Doc died. In 1952, the United States Army chased them off the peak. Ooh. The state of New Mexico had relinquished Victoria Peak out from under the Noss family to the U.S. Army for the expansion of their missile range, White Sands Missile Range.
Okay. So this is 52.
Babe and the Noss family were forced off the land by the Army. She was told she would be allowed to return as soon as it was convenient and not an interference to national security. So
that's only 3 years later.
So the Noss family continues to petition the Department of the Army at the White Sand Missile Range, at the Pentagon level. So she's like trying to get the government off the land so she could go back in. But that's when you started to get the stories from these guys in the Air Force who were like,
interesting.
Basically saying that, we knew what was in that peak. We knew that was gold in there.
Dang.
Because according to this guy, Airman, I think his name was SC. Let me look here. He was an airman who, hold on, guys. Hang with me. Here it is. Airman First Class Thomas Burlett and a group of off-duty soldiers was told that the peak was off limits. However, they went to search for the gold. They stumbled upon an entrance to the cave and the treasure within it, but they decided not to bring any gold out of the peak because they were worried they were going to be disciplined by the military.
Okay.
He reported his find, but he was denied permission to explore it further. He later returned on his own and dynamited the new entrance and the four places to conceal it. And so all these years, the Army's there.
Yeah.
The military's there. In 1963, the Army sought exclusive rights to the peak, including mineral rights. Mining.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, an aerial photograph showed several roads crisscrossing the peak, suggesting that they had tried to excavate.
Oh, man. They were there for the gold.
So
Doc, at least in part.
So, Doc Noss finds it. Doc Noss tries to open it up. He fails. He gets some of the gold out.
He starts trading in the black market.
He gets killed because, you know.
And then the government catches wind of it.
Government somehow caught wind that there was something here.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, he was dealing in the black market. They've got a beat on that, too.
Maybe, but the bottom line is that the government, I think, found out.
Yeah. And they're like, okay.
Next thing you know, it becomes
suddenly we need to be here.
It's a missile range.
Yeah.
Suddenly you have guys from the military saying, oh, yeah, we saw the gold in there. Now, wait a minute now. Now, Doc Noss and Babe Noss, I don't know how many friends they have in the military, but what I'm saying is that suddenly, again, all these people, you have a number of people saying, yeah, we saw gold bars in this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And the army is there for years.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, the state of New Mexico says that there's aerial photos that the army has tried to excavate into the mountain. Come on.
I know. They're not trying to find missiles.
And if you ask me where Victoria Peak's treasure is, gone.
It's with the military. It's with the gone. United States military.
Whatever. I mean, I'm not giving any opinion on that. I think it's gone.
Yeah, it's at least, at the very least, it's gone.
The last exposition attempt.
Golly.
The last expedition attempted was in 1977.
Okay.
The crown Doc found, remember I told you he found a crown,
mm-hmm.
apparently lies buried along with other parts of the treasure somewhere in the New Mexico desert. After his death, his heirs never recovered any of the gold bars. However, a man named Tony Jolly, the man who helped him hide the bars, went back years later and retrieved 10 of them. So this guy named Tony Jolly was a friend of Doc Noss,
okay.
and he claimed that he saw Doc Noss bury some of these bars, and he found 10 of them.
Oh, wow.
After decades of controversy, legend, and intrigue, the heirs of Babe and Doc Noss are still fighting for their rights. Listen.
Wow.
The most, let's see, I'm looking for the newest news on Victoria Peak. It is not known if any other treasure has ever been found. Honestly, I think, you see pictures of the crown, but I don't think they had any pictures of the bars or anything.
Oh, yeah.
According to a guy named Captain Swanner, left evidence of his presence in one of the caves of Victoria Peak during the 1977 expedition. Babe and other excavators found Swanner's evidence. Inside the peak, they found military debris and battery packs. In one of the deeper tunnels, they took pictures of an inscription on the wall which read, Captain Orby Swanner, 7 October 1961. Swanner's military serial number was also included. I really think this is real. Now, look, I don't know how much is exactly true or not, but yeah. I think Doc Noss found something.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I think the government got wind of it.
I mean, it sounds about
and
right.
And I think the government showed up and...
We finna take that gold.
Yeah. They wanted to know where the gold was at. Yeah, I think so.
I want the gold.
I think so. Yeah, that's wild. So that's these three stories, you know. I think these are really good. These were really good stories. I think these were really interesting.
Yeah, these were fun. I like the urban legend type ones.
So looking back to the ones that are, what is it? I said two were unsolved, one was solved. So obviously, I think that the Anastasia one is solved, ironclad.
Yeah, solved. That's done.
The Victoria Peak treasure, we don't know what happened to it. I think that was a real treasure.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in that mountain anymore.
No,
I think the military got it. That's just what I believe.
They gone.
Now, I don't care. Whatever you want. Look, don't get mad at me. I don't want the gold. You guys can have it. I just think you have it. You don't have to get mad at me for saying you have it. I just think you have it.
I like how you're like, the government's listening to our podcast right now, and they're like, hey, listen, Toby.
Who knows?
You're upset at the wrong guy.
I'm just saying, hey, if you have it, that's fine.
I'm calling a spade a spade is what I'm doing.
It's like going over someone's house and go, this is your couch. You have this couch. This is your TV. I don't want it. You don't have to get mad at me for identifying that it's yours, but it is yours. I think that gold is there. They got that gold. I absolutely believe that.
I wish y'all could see his face.
But the unsolved mystery of it is exactly, you know,
the Mary Celeste is fun. Fun. I mean, I don't, the poor people, because something obviously bad happened to them.
Do I know
but
for
it's
sure?
fun to entertain.
Do I know for sure that the government has the gold? I don't know for sure. God. I'm saying that's the speculation.
No, yeah, I'm with
you. It's still unsolved. We don't know for sure. And
you know what's probably happened is UFOs took it.
And
No.
And as far as the marriage,
it was New Mexico.
And as far when I'm talking about Victoria Peak, I'm talking about what I think most likely happened.
Yeah, no.
Most
I'm,
likely
I'm
happened
kidding.
Is the government was like, "There's gold there, get
Let's,
it."
Yeah, see, well,
get it.
Well,
and I think that.
Well, it's. I mean, look. Technically, it's in the United States. It can be seized by the United States government.
I think that the Mary Celeste was a matter of something went wrong on that ship. They got on the lifeboat. Something happened that separated them from the boat.
I really honestly think it was just the ocean.
Well, yeah.
The elements around them. And I don't think they were captured by pirates. Yeah. We had like a whole, like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thing going on.
And I think that Anastasia died under the Bolsheviks in 1918. And I think that Anna Anderson just was an opportunist. You know,
we don't know. It's possible she could have been very obsessed with the story. She might have had a lot of history.
Yeah, but I don't think. But you know,
no. I mean, prior to her hospitalization, you obsess over things. You have like 18,000 Wikipedia tabs open. I'm just saying she could have been like a real like whiz on the Romanovs, went nuts and drew on that.
Possibly.
You know, I mean, who doesn't want to, doesn't want to escape their present circumstances by being somebody else sometimes?
Well, that's what
you know what I'm saying? I think that's possible.
I don't think it's so much a mystery. The Anastasia thing is it's just a really fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a really amazing story that she was able to kind of live her life based on that.
Right.
I mean, if you look her up in Wikipedia, guys, she's called an imposter.
Okay.
Like, she is called, it's not like, oh, she's an alleged imposter, or she's, oh, maybe somebody claiming. No, she is an imposter. Like, it.
Yeah. You know. No, I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to look up, I mean, I've already looked up her, but I'm going to have to look up the origin of the cartoon Anastasia, because you know me, I'm very well versed.
What year?
I'm very, 90, I don't know.
Hold on. Look it up, because they didn't get the final word on Anastasia until 07-08. That was
realized. It definitely didn't come out then.
So when Anastasia came out, and I think it was in the 90s, there was still that speculation.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, 97. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying, because the reason why I'm saying that is because in the cartoon, one of the big, because it's something you said earlier, and in the cartoon, they're like, how does she know all these intimate details? How does she know this thing? How does she know that thing? Sophie, Budkin, those are names mentioned in the cartoon. So yeah. So I find it interesting. It obviously had to be an inspiration for the cartoon, except that the cartoon is set actually like in like 1919. Like it's set like, you know, it's set not 1919, but it's set, what is it? Because How old was she when you know everything happened? But in the cartoon, she's like a teenager or like, you know, young adult, about to age out of the foster home, or she's aging out of the foster home. So she's probably 18, right? So it's not 1937 or anything like that. But like, it's just funny because so many of the details that are mentioned in this episode are like talking points in the cartoon. So obviously, what I'm saying to everyone listening is we're obviously going to be covering Anastasia at some point.
Well, yeah, probably.
So just, that's coming down
but
the
path. But we're going over an hour
yes,
here.
Yes, we're approaching our time.
And I want to, you know, respect
wrap it
that
up.
Time, which we really appreciate. Thank you for your time. If you've listened, made it this far, we hope you've enjoyed our take on Victoria Peak Treasure and Mary Celeste and Anna Anderson / Duchess Anastasia. It's been quite the ride. And we will definitely do more Unsolved Mysteries. I do enjoy talking about these.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing now.
So before we go, just if you could tell everybody where they can find us, Brooke, and we can get out of here.
If you're not already following us, we would love for you to join us on Instagram. We are at The Tape Store. You know, we post pretty regularly there. If you want to send us a DM, you know, send us a comment, that would be amazing. Also, you can find us wherever you stream your podcast, whether it's Apple, Google, whatever. If you feel so inclined, if you like what you hear, you know, if you're enjoying this and it's making your day, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It definitely helps. It's very encouraging, but it also helps fellow nostalgians find podcasts like ours. So if you feel so inclined, we would love for you to do that. And
Well, we appreciate again you listening and going on this journey with us, and we will be back in 2 weeks with another journey for you guys and for us. And until then, this has been Toby,
and this is Brooke,
and we will see you guys next time.
Bye bye.